There are so many reasons why I got into teaching.
One of the best things is the light bulb moment.
When you see a pupil suddenly understand something, that's really, really special.
Every child is so full of potential, and the thing that makes me proudest to be a teacher is seeing them realise what they are capable of.
I don't think any other job can give you the same satisfaction.
That's why I chose to teach.
You could get £26,000 tax-free to train. Search, apply to teach. Selected subjects only, subject to eligibility.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. Worldwide. Podcasting since 2005. Take it out. You're listening to Gamertag Radio. Back on the scene. With your host, yeah. Podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Here we go. Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 588. This is Paris, and I'm here with Pete.
What up?
Now, Danny's not here because he's getting hit with a foul ball at the head at the Marlins Stadium or whatever he's doing right now. But I went and got the one, the only, especially this week with No Man's Sky coming out. I went and got Khalif Adams from Spawn On Me podcast. Khalif, thank you for coming on.
Thank you guys for having me, man. I always love to rock with you guys because, you know, I feel special when I get to rock with y'all. So thank you so much for having me on.
No, again, thank you for coming on. And like I said, with No Man's Sky coming out and you doing your thing with No Man's Sky, I haven't played it yet. Pete hasn't played it yet. I felt you were like the perfect person to come on here and kind of give your early impressions. And you can kind of talk about the website that you're also doing around this game as well. But before we get to that, I want to remind everybody to go to gamertagradio.com. You can also check us out over at play.it. If you want to leave us any feedback, our email address is fanmail@gamertagradio.com, or you can leave us a speakpipe at speakpipe.com/gamertagradio, or if you want to leave us a voicemail, that number is 786-273-7GTR. So Khalif, talk to me, man.
Oh,
No Man's Sky. We joke about it being vaporware, but I was literally on your Twitch stream watching it last night, and I even may have said a couple rude things while you were playing. But please, let's talk about this game.
So I think No Man's Sky is a really interesting game to come at a really interesting time in what we've been seeing for the past at least 6 months, where, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I know 2016 has been a strong year for games just in general. It seems like it's been really strong from top to bottom. There really haven't been a lot of misses. There's been a lot of hits, but not a lot of misses. They haven't been crazy big hits, but I think that there have been a couple of really good strong titles in there. No Man's Sky, with all the hype that has been going on for the past 3 years, I feel is going to not make most people's lists. I don't think it's going to make a lot of people's lists because I think that the hype has overreached to an extent that has done the game a disservice. And I think that that's going to wind up being what happens when most people kind of get the game at home, is they've kind of bitten into or dug into all the stuff that we've talked about over the past couple of years with every video that's come out and every discussion from Sean Murray and the rest of the folks from Hello Games kind of coming on. And now when they get it in their homes, they have this preconceived notion of what they expect the game to be, what has been kind of thrown out there from PR, and then what they actually get to play on day one. So far, the game is great. I think, depending upon what your expectations were going in, you will find very specific things that you'll like and things that you won't. I kind of dug into the idea of this being a game where, like Sean Murray talked about, being kind of lonely in a way, which I think is kind of good for this particular game. I kind of liken it to what Spore would have been if, you know, they got it right. There's a lot of just math that goes along with this game that makes this game really interesting. I think the actual game.
Did you say math?
Math, like straight math. And I think that's.
I don't play video games for math though.
but here's the thing, and this is the point that I was going to get to, was gameplay wise, it is a difficult game to convey to people unless you actually sit down and play it. Like when you but again, it kind of leans back towards what your expectations were. If you went into that game thinking that you're going to have a shoot fest, you're not going to have that. if you're thinking that it was going to be kind of running around the map and trying to dig around and kind of collect things, that's not it either. It feels like if you were in the Matt Damon movie The Martian, but in game form, mixed with a little bit of Assassin's Creed as far as kind of the way the map moves and kind of generates itself. Then you add a little bit of Spore in there, and then you add a little bit of just kind of exploration that goes along in resource management and things like that. So it feels more like if they took Don't Starve, but didn't fully go all the way out there.
All the way. Yeah, because, you know, I read Phil Kohler's early impressions from Polygon. I read Austin Walker's early impressions from Vice Gaming, and they were similar in the way of kind of like what you're saying. It sounds more survival than exploration early on, mm-hmm. at least, because it sounds like what Phil was saying as he got a little further in, that kind of lessened as he basically built up more inventory.
Right.
So he didn't have to manage and juggle things around so much. And, you know, he got to actually he went to a trading post or something. So he ran into other ships and things like that. So that kind of took away that sense of loneliness for him. Mm-hmm. But I've said from the get go, and Pete, please jump in. But like I've said from just the get, looking at this game, my worry isn't today. Mm-hmm. My worry is 6 months from now. What's going to be that carrot that they're going to be dangling out there to keep me exploring, to keep, you know, seeing these new planets and doing all these things that you're doing early on in a game? I mean, are you getting any impression that you personally, I know you think a lot of people this isn't going to be their cup of tea, but you personally, are you early on, do you have that impression that you'll still be playing this 6 months from now?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I was really excited about, which was interesting because of the pre-launch gameplay that a lot of people kind of first took in and first ingested, that when people got their copies early and they were like, you know, this isn't exactly, the Hello Games were saying, this isn't exactly what you're supposed to be getting day one. And it was boring to watch it when people were playing pre-patch. Now with the patch out, it's different in a lot of ways, but gives me hope that they will be continuing to do things that will make the systems that they already have in place more robust. So it's like,
now,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but you brought up that patch, and I definitely wanted to touch on that. Can you go into that a little bit, some of the differences that you've seen since you've been playing it from what it was pre-patch to what it is now when it is truly the real game? And look, there's a whole nother sub conversation to this that, you know, you and I were following on social media, but that's another time for another day. But what about that day one patch?
Interestingly enough, the things that kind of came about with that patch were more technical than anything else. Because I think the thing that was prefaced with all of the conversation was when the pre-patch stuff came out, there was a couple of folks who basically said that they finished the game. They finished the main storyline, the main kind of overarching arc of what you're supposed to do, which is get to the center of the universe. And they said, we did that within 30 hours. You can do it. You can do it in 30 hours. There's basically a line that goes from where you are when you start the game to a imaginary line that goes, well, not even imaginary, a direct line that goes from you from planet to planet to planet to the point till you get to the center of the solar system. The difference that happens is that you'll have to kind of build up your ship to get there. So they made some changes to the economy so that isn't as easy to do. That was one part of the patch. And then everything else, technical stuff that was like, you know, atmospheric stuff that made it seem and look a little bit better. There were issues with pop-in and they kind of addressed some of that stuff. And there were a couple of other kind of small tweaks that they added to it that when people talked about it, they were like, oh, this is a whole new game. This is a whole different experience. And to a certain extent, it was. But in the grand scheme, the stuff that people got pre-patch wasn't the initial or kind of fully thought out and fleshed out idea that Hello Games wanted to put out. So people got upset. Then they were like, this patch is adding all these new things that makes this game specific and different. And I didn't really buy into that. I was like, this is what they're trying to do. And this is the product that you would have gotten if you didn't get a copy early. So you really can't complain when you're seeing things and not getting the full experience. So it was a bunch of those things that went into it that feel like it made it a little bit better. And it feels different. It feels a little bit different from the stuff that I've seen on Twitch before. So that it was a good thing.
So
right on. Pete, yeah,
when
go ahead,
I
Pete.
When I see the game, the two games that pop up in my mind are, it's a combination of Minecraft and Elite Dangerous.
Yep.
With Elite Dangerous being the one that's more fresh in people's mind when you think of a procedurally generated game. What are the differences besides, I mean, well, I guess there is combat in a sense when you're out in space and you're seeing either, you know, creatures, or if you can encounter another live player in that such an expansive gameplay, is there any kind of human interaction?
No, I mean, that was an interesting thing that happened today too. The day we're taping, Kotaku put out a piece where the big discussion was about Sean Murray and the rest of the crew over there talking about the systems being too big, being 18 quintillion planets in the solar system, and you will more than likely never see another human player. Today, two people landed on a planet that they knew of. And got to it and didn't see each other on the same planet. So the news now is kind of breaking that maybe what Sean Murray said wasn't necessarily true. It could be that it was basically versions or instances like in an MMO where you're on the same kind of place, but you're not in the same instance. So it's hard to determine if and when you're going to have that multiplayer experience that people talked about. But the grand overarching conversation is that they said that you would more than likely not anyway. But people keep harping on the idea that you should. And I think it's a weird misconception that people have when they've said from the beginning, like, this is not a multiplayer game. It's in an online space, but it is not a multiplayer game. But people keep trying to shoehorn multiplayer into it by saying, why can't I go see my friends? And they said, it's too damn big. It's too big. You're not going to see everybody. You're not going to go hang out with your friends and traipse around the galaxy and go hang out. So it's been interesting to see them spin it. Now that one kind of thread has been pushed out there, when, and he's kind of been lessening even more the idea that there's multiplayer in it or any kind of semblance of multiplayer in it. So no, you're not going to see any people in there. It is a lonely game in that respect. And I think that, and if we want to talk about kind of things I think that are good and bad so far that I've noticed, that is a part of the good and bad of it. You can flip it on both sides of a coin and go pro or against the kind of loneliness parts of that game.
Well, you know, you lead me right into something, which again is another reason why I wanted to have you on here. Speaking of loneliness and collaboration and working with your friends, why don't you talk about the website that you started surrounding this game?
Oh, so thank you for bringing that up. So I kind of wanted to make a side project that would help people kind of remove themselves from that lonely part. Because the cool thing about this game for me was hearing that the fact that there's going to be such a big galaxy that you may never, ever see everything. Most of the games that we see now that we get the chance to play, you can min-max everything. You can get everything that you wanted out of that game, see everything, and then turn it off and trade it in and be done with it. And this kind of game doesn't seem like you'll ever be able to do that because it's randomly generated. It's all math. And it's cool the way that it kind of implements all that stuff in the way that you go from a planet to another planet and things kind of move around and change and switch. So I decided to do a site called allourskies.com where basically you'll be able to upload screenshots and videos of any of the stuff that you discover or anything that you think is visually cool to look at that you'd want to share with other people, something that you found or they have these kind of artifacts that are around in the world that are really cool and you want to share that with people. But what we wanted to do that's different is kind of curate some of that experience for people. So I look at each thing that someone would submit as if you were going into an art gallery. And that art gallery is curated with a specific kind of thought that you want to give out to the people who you want to consume it. So if Pete wanted to basically send in some stuff that was literally just nothing but sunsets, and he wanted to share that as, you know, Pete loves sunsets, that would totally be Pete's joy. Pete loves sunset. So he would send that in. I'll upload all that stuff. It'll have your name on it, and basically it's yours. It's yours to have through the site. It'll be curated in the way that you've decided to upload that work and share it with other people because you felt that that thing was cool. the other part of that, the other side of that, is that when you continuously send stuff in, or if you do send things in later on, we'll be tagging all that stuff with your name. So there's a submission form, you'll tag your name with it, or we'll tag your planet with it. And we'll kind of hopefully be building the database for people to kind of look at stuff that they would have never seen before. So we have our planet, we have our galaxy Brakago for our Spawn on Me folks. And there's three planets in there. And then there's cool stuff within those planets that I'll be putting up. And then there's been a couple of people who submitted some things too, who they'll just be sharing stuff that they thought was cool and that they thought was really pretty or exciting or interesting to look at. So it's a curated site just to make sure that people have something else to kind of look at during the process of kind of figuring out what planet they got to and what they didn't see. And hopefully it'll have a cool time with that.
So have you had any interaction with Hello Games with regards to All Our Skies? Like, have they worked with you, or have you had a chance to speak with them or get any kind of collaboration going?
No, I would love to. I'm dying to work with those cats in some form or fashion, because I think, you know, the hard part about doing projects like this is you don't know how it's ever going to turn out. You never know what the reception is going to be. And it's the reason why I kind of started it small. I didn't want to go full fledged and get a whole big dev team to kind of work and make a new site, because you never know if the game is going to do well, even if you believe in it. So it's super lean at this point, but I do want to work with them. I'd love to have some folks from their team submit some stuff from their art team and anybody else who's been playing their stuff. We did get a quick early shout out from the folks from NVIDIA when we first started it, because they have their tech that they're using for No Man's Sky on their new card set. And they're supposed to be putting out some really crazy big 4K images that you'll be able to capture within the game when it drops on the 12th. So I would love to. Yeah, I'm sure. And it's going to be cool. And that's the beauty of it, is the game in and of itself is a gorgeous game. I think it'll roll back into people's expectations again of what they wanted as opposed to what they got. But I think for the people who kind of settle in with it after a while, you know, you'll find something in there that would appeal to you in a way that is both artistic and both maybe some gameplay stuff in there too.
That's dope, man. So give that URL one more time.
You can check it out at allourskies.com. If you go to allourskies.com/submissions, that's where you can throw everything up in the form. It'll take about 24 to 72 hours because it's only me putting the stuff up and we're doing it manually. That way we don't get a whole bunch of lewd pictures up in there talking about
Well, you know that was going to happen.
Yeah,
it'll be allourpenises.com.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm not going to do that. That's not okay. And I hope, and I'll probably put my first discovery was the beautiful mushroom plant that I named Paris Lily.
That was. Do you know someone tweeted at me? There's also a 42-year-old from St. Petersburg, Florida, playing out there too in No Man's Sky. So that was freaking hilarious. Is it? But that's the beauty of it, though, to be able to do stuff like that. Those are the kind of things that intrigue me. That you can find something unique and you can name it and you own it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I really encourage everyone out there, definitely go to allourskies.com, take advantage of it. You know, if you're playing the game, make your submission, spread the word on social media, and hey, even hit up Hello Games so they can get involved as well.
Yeah, let us know what you think about it. Let us know, because it's super early and it won't go live until the 12th. You can submit stuff now, but when it goes up on the 12th, you'll be able to see the stuff that's already up there. And let us know what you think about it, what we should do better, and feedback is always welcome.
Awesome, man. So again, thank you for coming on for that. We're not going to kick you off the show.
I thought you were just booting me off.
Yeah. I was about to boot you over. I know, right? I caught myself as I was saying it. I'm like, whoops, that sounded like I'm kicking him off. No, but as we move on with the show, because we would definitely love to get your feedback on this as well. So when the day started and I was putting together show notes, it was a rumor, and now it's official. Sony has sent out invites for a September 7th unveiling in New York City. They're calling it the PlayStation meeting, but all the rumors leading up to it has led everyone to think that this will be the unveil of the PlayStation Neo. So, Pete, you weren't on here last week, and I'm the dum-dum. I'm always the dum-dum when it comes to the show, but I said, they ain't putting out Neo this year. They're going to delay it to early 2017 because they're going to boost the power on it. It ain't coming out this year. Well, looks like I'm going to be wrong. So, Pete, what are your thoughts on Neo? Do they need to get this out this year? Are you excited for it? What do you think?
Well, I think after, you know, leading out of E3 was the big question mark with regards to Sony and, you know, their Neo product, which is essentially the 4.5, you know, upgrade that allows, you know, was it 4K, you know, they're saying 4K gaming. We, you know, they haven't confirmed it, and I'm sure we'll hear more about this at this event on September 7th. With Microsoft coming out and stating that Scorpio will indeed have, you know, 4K gaming and everything that gamers are expecting/wanting in a console, Sony had to, I think, in my opinion. And, you know, that, again, that's my opinion, and I could be wrong. I could be right. Some people have mixed feelings about that. But I think they had to, just for the press and for the hype, for the hype machine. They've been first in every other announcement. And I think Microsoft beating them to the punch with stats and facts and specs at E3 may have dug in and maybe potentially hurt any possible sales that, you know, Sony was expecting by announcing theirs but not revealing or unveiling anything at E3 or prior to E3. So I think it makes sense for Sony to bring, you know, some of this good karma that's been floating around Microsoft since E3, and, you know, try to source it back to their side. Now they're saying it's supposed to be a technical showcase, so I'm assuming we're going to get in-depth information. You know, are they going to throw out, oh well, Scorpio does 6.5 teraflops, so we're going to do 8, 9, 10 teraflops. You know, that's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting, you know, what are they using for their GPU? Are they I'm assuming everybody's going AMD at this point. You know, are they going to go with what is it, the Polaris GPU?
Or, it's supposed, you know, to be basically a 480. That's been the rumor.
Right. So are they staying in the same CPU range? Are they overclocking? Are they adding, you know, are they, well, GDDR5 is the standard at this, you know, at this date anyway. So I'm assuming, you know, they're going to bump it from 8 to potentially either 12 or 16. You know, it'll draw out the map for the next year as to where Sony is going. And, you know, I'm curious, but I don't know if I play with my PlayStation enough to warrant a purchase. I know, Paris, you do. That's all you play on, with the exception of maybe jumping on the PC occasionally. So I'm assuming
let's flip that, Peter. I play on the PC and I occasionally play on the play. No, I get what you're saying. But before I give my thoughts, Khalif, please, sir, what do you think this thing's going to be? Are you excited?
I'm on the fence a little bit, because it was funny. I was in a Microsoft store today on the way to a job interview and picked up a controller on the new S. And that was the most impressive thing about the new Xbox for me, was the controller. It felt really, really nice. So with the PS4, 4.5 or whatever it's with the Neo, I don't know what else they are going to do that's going to make me excited to go out to the store to maybe do a refresh right now. I don't see anything that they've shown besides God of War that's not coming out anytime soon that I'm going to say, you know, I might as well just jump on the boat now and get a new refresh console. I think they're going to have to make the case again on why you need it. They're going to have to still spin the PR in a really interesting way to kind of make it seem, because they're the front runner in both sales and in kind of mind share, of why they're going to want people to kind of go out and get this. I still don't know. And I guess I'll posit the question to you is, what has been a thing that you've seen that would make you want this new system? If you have the money to go buy that thing day one, what's the reasoning behind it?
Yeah, and it's funny you brought that up, because I've been saying all summer I'm going to get the Neo, and I still stand by that. I will get the Neo, but I'm softening my stance in saying that I will get it at some point, because I kind of came to the realization here in the last week or so, there isn't a first-party PlayStation game that I care to pick up in 2016
nope.
the rest of the way. Last Guardian, that's not me. That's not my bag. So it's, and I know a lot of people are anticipating, but it's not something that I necessarily care about. You know, Horizon probably would be the first game that I would start thinking about, which would be in February. But on the flip side, you know, like I've also said, PC, my PC is my Xbox at this point, thanks to Xbox Anywhere. So, like, they were talking about the Forza Horizon 3 and 4K and Gears 4 and all that in 4K. Well, guess what, player? I'll be playing those in 4K this year because I got – I'm just saying because I can do that, right? So when it comes to the console side, that was part of my reason. Like, I'll default to Neo because Neo – will give me those 4K capabilities on the PlayStation side that I'm already going to get on the Xbox side, if that makes sense, right? Mm. So I'll get it, but I don't necessarily think I need to run out and get it day one. It comes back to what you're saying. They got to convince me and everyone else why we truly need this thing beyond... Because look, if you don't have a 4K TV, I think you're crazy to want to get the Neo right now. It's just like the Xbox One S, and especially when the Scorpio comes out. Unless you're taking advantage of its 4K capabilities, what's the point? Stick with the console that you already got because you're still basically playing the same games in the same visual fidelity that you would whether you had the new machine or not, right? So I think that's first and foremost. They're talking to people that are 4K TV owners or who will be convinced to become 4K TV owners in the very near future, right? Another big thing is going to be price, because right. all the rumors said $399 because this was going to be a quasi 4K gaming system, not necessarily doing true 4K gaming. And it has come out again. Shout out to Austin Walker, Patrick Klepek. They were talking in their Vice Gaming. They were talking in their Periscope yesterday that, yeah, Sony has been experimenting with a 5.5 teraflop version of that Neo. Because they're going to upgrade the CPU. Sounds like the GPU is going to stay the same. They might unlock a little more power, you know, under the hood for it. But they're definitely going to upgrade that CPU if they go with that 5.5 teraflop version, which will put it more on par with whatever the Scorpio is going to be, right? So they can tout, we're doing 4K gaming, right? So, but if they do that, no way in hell it's going to be $399. It's more likely probably going to be $499, and that's probably going to be with a tiny hard drive in it. And you start talking 1 terabyte, 2 terabyte hard drives, you're probably looking closer to $600 at that point, right?
Right.
So if it's that much, you got to do some selling. Now, look, again, I will probably wind up getting it. I was even joking with our common friend Phoenix that if, oh no, actually it was Andrew. Shout out to Uriah. I was telling him that if GameStop or someone does some crazy trade-in incentive on my old PlayStation 4, then I could see me getting it day one because I'll probably get the max value for my PlayStation 4 doing it that way, if that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. But if I ain't seeing no incentive for my old PlayStation 4, then guess what? Paris is waiting. Let's be real. My PlayStation right now is my Destiny machine. That's what I play Destiny.
Right.
So Rise of Iron's already going to be out at that point. I've already been playing that. I don't need a Neo to play Destiny. So then it comes down to what kind of deal are you going to give me at Black Friday? What kind of deal are you going to give me during Christmas? Or am I literally waiting until February when Horizon comes out? Because I guarantee you that's one of the technical showcase games they will show. Horizon will be in 4K on September 7th. They're going to show it. You know what I mean? Obviously, God of War is going to be another big one for them to showcase the Neo. Things like that. Gran Turismo Sport might be another. But as we sit here September 7th, I'm very curious to see what that messaging is going to be. I'm very curious to see what that pricing is going to be. Because even someone like me who I've committed myself that, yep, I'm going to get a Neo, I don't know if I need one day one in October.
Yeah.
And I got a feeling their big hook is they're going to tie this some weird way into PlayStation VR.
I mean, they have to at this point. I mean, this is the reason why I was upset that they didn't do it at E3. And I'm even more concerned that they didn't then push it to the next PlayStation experience. Cause I think you then like these small kind of events are great for press, right? They're in the kind of core markets there. You'll have it maybe in an LA, but we know this one is going to be in New York, but it doesn't really do anything for the consumer besides they'll get the blurbs that are going to be on Polygon, Destructoid, and Kotaku, but they won't be able to really get hands-on with anything. They won't really be able to touch anything or get a chance to play any new games that would more than likely be announced with the console discussion if it was at a more consumer-focused event. And it doesn't feel like anything else that's going to be happening in that space besides VR on the PlayStation side is going to move units besides the lack of games. There's no games that are going to be coming out soon that I know of that I can think of off the top of my head that I'm super excited to get besides No Man's Sky that just came out. So unless they're going to maybe talk about No Man's Sky in VR, that doesn't really do anything for the console. That does more for the PlayStation VR, which they need to also be talking about more because they've gone kind of radio silent on that too. So they have a lot of work to do on the PR side of trying to make that case for why you definitely need this thing. And 4K TV for me especially is not it. I dig it. That's cool that 4K TVs are going to be the thing that's going to be happening in the next 2-3 years. But it's not going to be something that's going to get mass appeal for most people to go out and go buy a new TV
exactly.
and right. a new console. That's just not going to happen in the way the economy's hitting right now and the way that people are thinking about their gaming money. They want games. They don't need stuff that's going to make them buy a new TV.
I mean, because think about it. You're talking, let's just say for giggles, Neo's $500. A decent 4K TV, even at Black Friday prices, is going to be another $500 to $600, right? So throw in some tax, throw in some games that you're going to get. You're looking at a minimum $1,200 investment at that point.
Nope.
The majority of people don't have that type of disposable income. That's just a fact. So it is going to be a tough sell to get someone that isn't already invested, at least on the TV side already, with a 4K television to then also invest in a Neo at the same time and get both. And that's, and just flipping this to Microsoft for a second with Scorpio, that is one thing. Whether Sony forced their hand or not to announce Scorpio when they did, mm-hmm. it at least gave people a 15 to 16 month head start on getting a 4K TV.
Right. Start stacking cash for 16 months. That way you can be involved yeah. in even discussing whether you want to buy a 4K capable console. And it's why I think right. Sony had to make a move now, or else they were just going to continue to lose ground to Microsoft. So,
well, see, I don't necessarily see, that's why I was thinking February. I was really thinking they would just tie this thing in, kind of like what Khalif was saying. I was thinking they may hold off until PlayStation Experience to announce this thing mm-hmm. and then just put it out in like February along with Horizon. Because I don't think anything like this Xbox One S really is selling great right now. But this was a half measure move for Microsoft. Everyone knows it's about Scorpio. Even if they got Neo out early in 2017, you're still talking a 9-month head start on the competition in the quote unquote 4K gaming. Because if they put out a Neo that's on par power wise that can do 4K gaming the same as Scorpio, Microsoft has no advantage at that point. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it surprises me that it looks like Sony's going to pull an Apple, announce this thing early September, probably drop it late September, early October, which is not giving people a lot of time, like Pete just said, to stack cash to pick this thing up because it's going to be a premium product. If it comes in at $399 and is underpowered, it doesn't make sense to me.
I mean,
at this point,
they've hitched their wagon to that thought, though, right? They've already decided that this is the move they're going to make. Only thing they have to do now is they have to bolster it with some games. Like Microsoft hasn't even put out anything on the HDR gaming side yet. They've been talking about that as a feature, and they haven't put out anything that I've seen so far that would let me know that feature is going to get actually used.
Gears 4 will be the first one because even when we were at the that Xbox showcase thing on that Monday night, Gears 4, that there it was an HDR. They're all on 1S's. Yeah.
And was it significant enough that you would say that made
I wasn't looking at the screen go, oh my god,
right,
oh my god, I gotta go get a 4K TV with HDR. I wasn't thinking that at all.
And that's my main point, is that I think a lot of people right now are throwing around a lot of jargon that for people who are at home and who are listening to the podcast now and people who are the enthusiasts are still excited, but even those folks are not bought in on the actual technical side of getting these kinds of technologies in a way that's going to be their everyday box, their everyday gaming system, and care about it because things look really good now. things still look really fine. It's not that bad. Yeah, it's weird. It's weird that people are kind of pushing it.
Completely agree. So any last thoughts on PlayStation Neo, Pete?
No, I'm just, I want to hear more. I want to see what they're, I want to see what's under the hood. And if they do release the price, I want to see what it, I want to see where they're at.
Yeah, I'm, my guess is going to be $4.99. If it does wind up being at $3.99 and it can be that technical showcase that makes people second guess Scorpio, I'll be shocked at this point. But Khalif, any final words from you?
Whoever's going to be working the PR for Sony on that day, man, it's going to be a real conversation in the back room if they get that message wrong.
Yeah, agreed. And I guess I'll just end it by saying this. See, that's what makes me think they've got to be coming from a position of confidence right now to still announce this thing in September, because no one was forcing their hand to announce this in September. If they felt they needed more power, if they felt they needed more time, there was still a window. They didn't have to put out a Neo this holiday to push PlayStation 4s. You know what I mean? So it's interesting to me, unless the rumors about them needing Neo to truly showcase VR, that the PlayStation 4 was going to be, the current PlayStation 4 VR experience was going to be a downgraded experience. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was the fear.
I mean, that's smart. That's super smart. Yeah. If that's their angling that they're going to be doing, and this is a thing that they used to not do well, was support the peripherals that they talk about and announce. You saw it with PlayStation mm-hmm. Camera, they didn't really do much with that. And you saw it with PlayStation Move, they really didn't do much with that. If this is what they're doing, the angle, so that they can make PlayStation VR shine, then that's smart.
Yeah, maybe so. All right. Well, definitely hit us up, everyone listening. Let us know what you think about this announcement for PlayStation Neo on September 7th. We are dying to hear. So before we move on with the show, and Pete, I know you got a review coming up, let's get a word from our sponsor. Are you ready to save some money and play more games? Then let's talk about our sponsor, Gamefly. Gamefly is the best way to buy and rent all your favorite games. Just go to gamefly.com/gamertag, pick your favorite games, and have them mailed directly to your door. Gamefly is the leading video game rental service with over 9,000 titles to choose from. Let you try your favorite games and movies before you buy. Keep the games as long as you want, and you'll never have to worry about late fees, and you can cancel at any time. And they now offer movie rentals too. So go to gamefly.com/gamertag and start your free premium 30-day trial today. That premium trial allows you to check out two games or movies at a time, and you can only get this offer by going to gamefly.com/gamertag. So why wait? Sign up today. Start playing your favorite games absolutely free for 30 days at gamefly.com/gamertag. And look, you can go pick up No Man's Sky, you know, because you know I'm playing on PlayStation 4 right now. I'm sitting there looking at my PC going, man, I really like to play this game, but I can't. And I'm not getting it on PlayStation. But hey, you want to play it on PlayStation? You know, you can go pick it up at Gamefly. So definitely go check that out, guys.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it. Back on the scene. This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
So, moving on with the show. Pete, you have a review for us. So let's go ahead and get into that now.
All right. Well, shout out first foremost to the good folks over at Razer. Got to speak and hang out with them over at E3. And they sent me the Razer Manowar headset. I know we've done multiple headset reviews on the show, so I kind of feel like Paris and I have become like the aficionados on gaming headsets recently. So let's get down to what's in the box. Obviously, Razer's known for their marketing and their packaging. It always looks crisp and clean with that big, bright emerald color that Danny loves so much. But so when I first pulled out this headset, the first thing I noticed was how big it was. And from past shows, hearing you, Paris, mention about how big your head is and finding headsets, and it's a 50-50 well, dig at you.
You need a big head to hold this beautiful brain of mine.
Oh, man. But this would be a headset that would be perfect for you because it is big enough that it could comfortably fit any size noggin. I put it on my wife's head. I put it on mine. I put it on my dog's, but it didn't fit well. But it comes out. It looks solidly built, but in my personal opinion, the boom cans are just a little too oversized, but that may be just part of the design. The ear cups are well-sized and well-padded, so it did have a lot of comfort, especially for those long-term gaming sessions. It comes with the headset, a retractable boom mic that, you know, slides in and out of the left ear cup, makes, you know, talking really easily, especially if you maybe breathe out of your mouth excessively when you're gaming, and you know people don't like that. So I felt that was a real good design move from Razer. Comes with a 3.5 millimeter braided Razer audio cable, and I like to emphasize on the braided part simply because it shows in the quality of the build. When you're getting just like the regular rubber type cables that come with either your smartphones or other headsets, it doesn't have that build quality. And, you know, obviously Razer is known for that. It also comes with a 10-foot Razer extension cable. So I'll get into that in a little bit. So similar to other gaming headsets, the ear cans swivel about 90 degrees. So it allows them to rest on your shoulders when you're not using them. Also has volume knobs on the left and right cans. The one on the left did game volumes. The one on the right does chat volume. And one cool feature of the headset is either one of those buttons or volume dials are actually clickable. So you can click them up and mute individually either the sound altogether or just the chat. And another cool feature is that you can see on the mic if you're muted because the tip will glow red. So it's kind of like a not just an audible, but a visual cue that you're on mute. So in case like you're recording on the show like we have done before and you stay on mute, it does come in handy. So when we're talking about Razer, lighting is one of their big things, right? That you can customize using, you know, different profiles. You can change the colors. I've got mine all in, you know, orange, you know, to match the division, your favorite game, Paris. So, you know, you can, you know, adjust the visuals, you know, on top of, you know, the audio performance of the headsets. Going down to performance, really minimal complaints. Actually, while you and I were setting up the audio for the show today, you were mentioning that my audio was coming in and out, and I'm using the Astros, my A40s. We didn't have that the last couple of weeks while I was recording using the Razer Man Award. So, you know, just the audio, you know, fidelity is really good. Uses virtual 7.1 surround sound when you're playing on PC. It is PS4 compatible, but you only get surround sound just left and right. You don't get the full surround left, right, up, down sound, you know, the sound fields. Playing Overwatch, playing Doom Online, it really brings you into the game, especially having a real quality sound, you know, enabled headset. But when I played on the PS4, it was kind of lacking, and that comes, you know, that's to be expected when you're only getting left and right. So connectivity is probably one of the easiest I've ever experienced with regards to headsets. I was able to plug and play on PC and plug and play on PS4, no problem. Battery life, the package states 14 hours of pretty much, you know, full life on a single charge, and I never once had to recharge it in the 3.5-4 weeks that I tested this headset. It's probably the longest listed charge rate or, you know, lifespan that I've seen on other headsets. I know you did the G33, I believe, Paris, for the headset. There's states like an 8 to 12 hour battery life on a single charge. So that's coming from, you know, playing on video games, listening to music, or just, you know, having them while recording our show and stuff like that. Wireless signal, I was able to walk all the way to my kitchen, you know, with them on and, you know, be able to have constant communication with the people I was playing online with no issues. So if people are in the market for a mid-priced headset that is wireless, I would probably recommend the Razer Manowar over any other headset. And I'm not just saying that because they sent them out to us, you know, for a review. They're one of the better headsets out there. And to prove it, I want to give away, and I think we spoke about this a while back, I want to give away this Razer Manowar headset to a listener. All I want them to do is to send us an email, fan mail, voice message. Let us know which GTR episode has been their favorite, whether it's been episode 95 when I came on board for the first time or any other ones. You know, let us know, and then we're going to listen to all of them. We're going to check it out, and the best one that we all agree on, we'll get a free pair of Razer Manowar headsets.
Well, I have to admit, my favorite episode is episode 94. Because you weren't there. No, just kidding. I think we should disqualify the Let Us Dream episode because nothing will ever top that. And everyone will just say that. So we got to be more creative than that.
I was going to say the E3 when I was on there the first time. That would be great.
There you go.
He's got a point.
No, that's not true. That was terrible.
You know, only thing with the E3 ones, we didn't have episode numbers on them. So how are you going to pick which one it is? How are we going to know?
Just put it in the email. Say the one with Khalif on it. It was dope. It was the best one ever.
You've been on two, though.
Well, that one's now disqualified because I don't like what you said.
Oh, man. See, that was
Danny's listening to this as he's editing it going nuts.
He's probably
what are you talking about?
Anyway.
Stop telling him not what to say. No, but that's cool, Pete. So everyone, let us know, man. Let us know your favorite GTR episode, and you can enter for that chance to win these headsets.
And if you win it, you should definitely tell the people at Razer that you dug it and that you really like the headset.
Absolutely.
And you heard it on Gamertag Radio.
Boom.
So, wrapping up the show, we got to do fan mail. So cue the music.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
Dun dun, fan mail.
All right, so we got a voicemail from Jason, and let's go ahead and play that right now.
Hey, Gamertag Radio, this is your boy Jason Taylor, better known as Running Late. I got a couple of questions for you guys. The first one is, okay, I bought a PlayStation 4 because I thought it was the best system, and I bought an Xbox One. I have them both. When I first started, I was buying more games for the PlayStation. But now I find myself buying more games for the Xbox One simply because of the external hard drive. I can play the games on my external hard drive on my Xbox One. I want to know, has this affected any other people's purchasing choices on their games? I know Paris doesn't agree with this because he's part of the Master Race. But anyway, we're going to go on to the next question. Next question is, do any of you guys believe that PlayStation or Xbox will eventually come out with a system that will have like blades, like you would find like in a router, where you could just slide the old motherboard out when the new system comes in, just slide the new motherboard in, and away you go with your gaming, and it could possibly cost us as users a little less money? What do you guys think about that idea? And don't shoot me down, let me dream. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
All right, thank you for that voicemail, Jason. So Jason has a PlayStation 4, has an Xbox One, and he's finding that he's playing more games on the Xbox One because the external hard drive, and he's able to load more games on there due to external hard drive. And I guess I'm not allowed to have an opinion on this because I'm the master race, according to him. But, you know, I can dig it. I get what he's saying. And then, you know, he wants us to let him dream about his idea for basically the modular console. So Pete, I'll let you tackle that one first. What are your thoughts on this?
So if we've got a modular console, isn't that the same as replacing hardware components on a PC?
Well, see, I want to say that, but I don't think I should say that, especially when I read this email that we got after this. I don't know why, but to me, isn't that just a PC? At that point, you should just be getting a PC, right? I mean, Khalif, what do you think?
I want the Lego version of an Xbox. I want that all day, every day. I just want to be able to throw a new hard drive on there and do it. I just want my new console to just have a 4K monitor on it. I just want all the things on it at the same time. That's never...
Well, see, I mean, jokes aside, my thought on it is this. The whole point of a console is ease of use, right?
Right.
Once you start making it customizable and you can swap things in and out, I mean, a hard drive is kind of simple to do. You know, just plug the thing in USB and you're done. Mm-hmm. PlayStation 4, it's a little more complicated, but it, hey, that's buyer beware, use at your own risk. But he's talking about actually upgrading the system. The first time someone has to upgrade their console by swapping out the motherboard and it breaks their console, they're going to be on fire mad, and the lawsuit that's coming towards PlayStation and Microsoft for doing this will be astronomical. There's no way they're ever going to do
it. And also the...
And why, and, hey, look, and watch they announce it on September 7th. And the secret of the Neo is you can swap out the GPU. No.
The actual, like, this is the thing I want folks to kind of realize when they ask for stuff like this. And it's dope that that is a concept that would be out there, is the more things that you have to be able to remove, exchange, or replace makes it so much harder for quality control when you put out a system, so that when you have to then try to figure out which new piece is going to go out there and have to go get that new piece to go put on the console. And then you have to worry about, you know, the beauty of having consoles now is that if you really want to not have to worry about ever getting a new system, you can just keep the one that you have. But when you make things modular, then you have to start worrying about finding old pieces for new tech and new tech for old pieces and all these other in between interchangeable parts. And that's not good for anybody. That's not good for anybody at home. It's not good for the consumer. It's not good for the people who have to make it. And it's definitely not good for the people who have to then go find those pieces, because you're not going to find them after a couple of years.
Agreed. Now, since he also wanted to know our thoughts, like, he didn't want to know my thoughts, but he wanted to know your guys' thoughts about the with the external hard drive on the Xbox One, and he's finding himself playing more games on Xbox One because he has more space due to the external hard drive. Do you agree with that, Pete?
I think you're more apt to download or be more willing to download a game or buy a game if you've got the available space. Granted, I'm more on the tech side, so I'd be more apt to install a bigger hard drive on the PS4. A, just to be able to see if I could do it without any issue. I mean, they've been able to do it since PS3, and I think Shuhai said it back in like 2013 that there's a reason why they don't allow external hard drives. You can, you know, if you can just install a hard drive and a larger capacity hard drive on the PS3 and or 4, it's just should be able to just do it like that. Are there games on my Xbox external hard drive that I've never played? Yes, Halo 5. but yeah, I mean, it does give you it lessens that fear that I gotta be more cautious with my space. I mean, that's how I was leading up to when I bought my external hard drive. I was like, oh, do I want to get this game? Oh, if I do, what do I have to delete? And then, oh, if I want to play it again, do I have to download it? And it's a pain. Once I got the hard drive, it was a lot easier to just say, okay, I haven't played this game in 6 months, gone. I haven't played this game in 6 months, gone. And started moving all the games that I don't play onto the external hard drive to store the space onto the local one. Granted, the new one is the external is connected by USB 3.0, so it's supposed to take advantage of, you know, the high transfer rate. I don't know if I have any games on it, and I don't know if I've seen a difference on a performance basis. I would prefer to have a solid state drive in there just because I'm a nerd like that. It has made it a little bit easier to decide whether I'm going to buy or download one of the new Xbox for Gold games or what have you, simply because I have this space and I have downloaded them just to download them, so I don't have to worry about them later, and then I can just play them with my daughter or my kids or what have you.
Cleve?
Yeah, I went straight 2 terabyte on my PS4, and I don't even think about it at this point anymore. I'm just like, digital, thank you.
And you know, I'm the opposite of both of you, because I'm just the old cheapskate. I'm like, 500 is good enough. I only play a couple games at a time anyway. And if I want to play something else, I'll delete one and install the other one. Done.
Look at you. Just don't care about tech.
On my Xbox One, I did have a 1 terabyte external drive, and I had moved all my games on there, you know, as well. So, I mean, trust me, I totally get what he's saying. And I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, like, even my PC... 900 gigabytes, I think I have on there. Yeah. I mean, because I guess I keep all my important stuff on my NAS anyways, but like for gaming, yeah, I only have like 900 gigabytes of free space. It's all SSD. But
question is it super easy? Because I haven't used an external on my Xbox. Is it super easy when you plug and play it to your console to go from one to a different console? Like if you had two in the house and it just basically recognizes everything and then works? Or is that not a thing?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, it is formatted specifically, you know, for an Xbox to be able to read the drive. You can't do anything else with it. But mm-hmm. I don't know if I walked over to another Xbox and plugged it in, if it immediately recognized that. That's a very good question. I don't know.
Because that's the reason why I was wondering if you can do that. Then that's my only beef between the way that Microsoft has done that with the current consoles and the way Sony has done it with theirs, where they've made it super easy on the PlayStation platform, and they've made it a lot more difficult on the Xbox side to crack your machine open and put in a hard drive. I see why they did that external movement, but I'm like, if you're going to do that, then just let people crack it open and put a new drive in it.
No, I agree. But again, they're trying to protect their investment and lawsuits and all that. So they say, hey, just plug in an external drive. You know, I don't know. Different philosophies, I guess, between the two companies. But before we go, and again, Jason, thank you for that voicemail. We really appreciate it. And everyone listening, if you want to leave us a voicemail, that number is 786-273-7GTR, or you can leave us a SpeakPipe at speakpipe.com/gamertagradio. And as for email, we're about to read one right now. And this, I've been excited all day to read this. This is from Chris. And then Chris goes, hi, guys. First up, I wanted to let you know how much I enjoy the podcast. It has kept me company on my many walks to and from work over the last 12 months. I'm writing you with a simple request. Lay off the division, goddammit. Not a week goes by. As I read it the first time, he was yelling at me, so I didn't say it that way. Not a week goes by where you guys aren't ragging on it for something. Bugs, glitches, repetitive missions, blah, blah. I'm a huge fan of the game and have been since launch when I picked it up on Xbox One. I wasn't expecting to like the game, nor was I planning to buy it, period. I bought into all the hype around Destiny, only to be burned by a subpar game that cost me some crazy sum for a special edition, then was asked to buy the same game all over again to fix it when the Taken King launched. Destiny put me off the console's pretend MMO games for life. So when the Division was set to launch in the same vein, I was set to avoid it. After all that, a friend of mine told me to go buy the Division so we could play it online. I've been hooked ever since, and seriously hooked, and I know a lot of people who feel the same way. I bought it under duress, and it turned out to be one of the best gaming experiences I've ever had. Between the incursions, underground, and the new content, I always find myself with something to do in the game. The shooting mechanics are the best I've experienced in any shooter, and the atmosphere in the game is incredibly immersive. In the time I've been playing, I can count the number of times I've experienced a glitch using the fingers on my left hand. I was going to say something smart, but I'm not. And as far as crickets go, dudes, I have been grouping up with others in the game for months and never have to wait more than 30 seconds to a minute before I land in a group. The servers always seem to be busy enough with players. I just don't understand all the moaning out there about this game. Seems fine to me. I'd like to hear you go for at least one episode without you folks ragging on it. Chris from Sydney, Australia. Chris, thank you. Trust me, and I just said this a couple weeks ago. If you think we're talking crazy on here, please call us out. Please. I love the good emails or the bad, the negative. I just want feedback, right? So I truly appreciate this. Because, yeah, I have been ragging on the Division a lot. I literally, just the other day, nameless Ubisoft employee, I did a smart aleck tweet to him about a Division. I'm always ragging on the Division. So, you know what? I apologize, Chris. I really do. And if you've noticed, I've not ragged on the game all this episode. So this is your one episode where I don't rag on the Division. I can't promise what I'll do next week. I just can't, because I'm sure I'll say something smart aleck next week. But he makes a good point. There's still an audience out there for the game. People are still having fun with it. Who am I? Like I said, I'm just an idiot on a microphone. Who am I to tell you what you can like? If you love the Division, knock yourself out and love it. I love Destiny. I make no excuses about it. I love Destiny. I think it's fantastic. I think it's one of the most engaging co-op experiences that I've ever had in a video game. The Division just never grabbed me. Pete was with me. He knows. He was sitting right there when we interviewed the lead guy. My dog agrees because he's barking. That I don't know if you can hear him, but he agrees with me that, see, God damn it, dog, be quiet. Danny, don't edit this out. This is funny. So what I'm saying is Pete was with me at that preview event for the Division. And he knows when we were talking to the lead creative director, and I just saw the look of panic in his face because he didn't have answers for my questions, and that just kind of turned me off from the game, and I fully admit it. From that point on, I've been turned off from the game, and I've never truly given it a fair shot. Maybe I should. That's really the only thing I can say that, you know, maybe I've been too hard on the game and maybe I should give it more of a shot. But it's hard for me to want to have that opinion when all my friends, which two of them are on this podcast right now, that were just loving the division at the start, don't play it anymore. So I need friends that want to play the division.
If hey, I had I'll friends that were playing the division. I can't play the division with you because you don't play it on Xbox.
I have it on the PC.
Well, until they start doing game, you know, play, you know, Xbox Anywhere on that.
But all jokes aside, so Khalif, like, obviously you just heard this one, Division. You know, I've made jokes with you guys offline as well. I mean, what are your thoughts on the game? I mean, we haven't really heard what you think about it since post-launch.
I mean, I thought we weren't supposed to rag on the game.
No. I think it's more meek. Because like it was funny because when we got this email, this first thing Pete said, Pete's like, I don't rag on a game. That's just you. And I'm like, you're right. That's just me. Well, so no, if you need to rag on it, rag on it. It's fine.
Well, the interesting thing about that game is there's a couple of instances on that one. Because the first thing I thought of when you brought up the division was I was like, and Pete and Paris talk about vaporware to me. And then the division came out and it totally poofed and went away. It didn't even stay around long enough for me to really enjoy it for as long as I think I should have. Even though I played it for a bunch of hours, it's one of the weirdest kind of phenomena, at least when me paying attention to how I'm spending my time with games, is I played the heck out of that game and then it instantly just fell off. It wasn't even like a gradual slowdown. It wasn't something where another game came out. I played it enough and I got was to the point. What do you mean?
Was it though? Because I mean, other games came out that could have caused that lack of attention, like, you know, maybe like an Uncharted 4 or.
I fell off, you know, before that stuff dropped on, because it was a weird thing. Like the incursions came out and I did the incursions and didn't feel like I was getting anything new in the product that I was given. And it was the thing that they had hyped up so much to say, well, this is going to bring all this new content. You get these new gear sets and you get all this other stuff. And then your light level. Ha, that's funny. Your level will go up. Your gear level and gear score will go up. And it didn't feel like anything different. The shooting stuff is still kind of wonky to me. It doesn't feel like things translate well. The actual Dark Zone stuff that I was excited for was too glitchy when it came out and turned me off to the experience. And it had a lot of potential, but there was no promise on that end. It was a lot of stuff that went into that game that would have made it good if they had paid attention to it. But it made me excited for other stuff that's in the Ubisoft wheelhouse, which is interesting. Like, I'm super excited for Wildlands. That's a game I want to play. I'm more excited for Honor now because of some of the stuff that you see kind of implemented and kind of touching in that Venn diagram for that stuff. But Division fell off super hard for me. It just did not click after the first couple months that I played it.
Pete, anything that
I have to admit, I have fallen off the train. I've fallen off the train and I am, you know, I won't give up my Division backpack, but I still enjoy it if and when I do jump on there. Unfortunately, I have been taking massive swigs out of the Destiny Cup lately.
It's so good.
And, you know, having that opportunity to interview Deej with Paris at E3, it stoked the fire. It stoked the fire to make me want to jump in. It's to the point now that we've got coworkers at work now that didn't play it before, but purchased it. And so now now I have a glut of people to play with. And, you know, actually we've played maybe at least once or twice a week jumping on just to get me up to level 40 so we can start doing strikes.
Pete.
As Pete. A group. And I still haven't played with Paris to this date.
That's messed Pete? Up, man.
Hey, Pete.
Hey.
Chris is going to cuss you out in the next email because you took a Division topic and turned it into Destiny. That's all I'm saying. I'm just pointing that out. Just letting you know. Just letting you know. He's going to cuss you out.
Good. Cuss me out, email. Chris. If you don't like what I'm talking about and how I'm naysaying on the Division and big upping on Destiny. But unfortunately, you can't talk about one without talking about the other.
No, I agree. They're intertwined now.
They are. And unfortunately, what the Division has become is the one thing that Destiny did do in my personal opinion, and you know, again, you know, some others could agree and others will disagree, but I don't like the bullet sponginess of the enemies, where all it seems is they just raise up the difficulty of sponginess and the number of clips you need to put into every character. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Destiny, they put, you know, it's an arc burn. So you could do more damage if you have a specific type of weapon, and that causes you to grind and try to get those bigger, better, you know, arc or void or fire type weapons. It's things like that unfortunately Massive never took into account or took into consideration when increasing the difficulty of some of these bosses or AI or NPCs, that sometimes it's just, you're just sitting there just throwing bullets down the hall for, you know, for minimal effect. Those are the little things that people like myself look at, and it's like, damn, why couldn't you modify something that you may have found on other games that play similar and, you know, use them towards your game? You know, I think that's an opportunity that they missed out on.
Chris, I'm just talking to you directly right now. Just pretend the other two guys aren't here. I'm not the one saying this. Paris is not saying this stuff. I was talking about The Division, and I didn't rip on it once. I just want to make that clear.
That's okay, Chris. Because
Miss Leo thinks he's going to get you, boy, for all that Destiny talk up in here. So I think we should wrap the show up at this point. We've gone over an hour. Jesus. It's crazy. We didn't even get to Gears of War 4 or Titanfall. But again, Chris, thank you for sending that email. We really appreciate it. Everyone else out there listening, you want to send us an email, that is fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Also, don't forget to go check us out over at gamertagradio.com. You can also find the podcast over at play.it, and you can subscribe to us over at Stitcher, iTunes, or your favorite RSS feed application. I don't know what I'm saying in podcast directory. But Danny will be back next week. This is why I don't host. Danny will be back next week. And I'm sure we'll get into more discussions, but keep sending that feedback. We really appreciate it. So Khalif, thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it. AllOurSkies.com. I really hope this takes off for you, brother. I can't wait to pick up No Man's Sky on the PC so I can check it out for myself. Pete, any last words from you?
Luke Cage. Oh my God.
Oh man, Luke Cage.
Oh, you know, I wasn't going to bring that up because that's 20 more minutes if we start talking about that. Yo, if you've not seen the final Luke Cage trailer, that's September 30th on Netflix, that thing is fire, man. That soundtrack is just going to be so dope.
That's going to be the nastiest show on Netflix for a while.
And I said,
oh my God.
I said this the other day, actually, and I could probably add a couple of more. Netflix is killing it from a sound perspective. Mm-hmm. Like if you just threw Luke Cage, The Get Down, the Stranger Things soundtrack, that's it. I don't need Spotify or Apple Music or any of those other applications. Just give me those soundtracks on repeat and I'm good.
Agreed. And let me get my shameless plug in since you brought up Stranger Things. The other podcast I do, Two Big Topics, will be out this Friday. We talk about RuPaul's Drag Race? What is it called?
Drag Race.
Yep. Drag Race. We talk about Stranger Things. We talk about Last Chance U, which is also on Netflix, and we get into some other shenanigans. So go check out that podcast, Two Big Topics. So, Khalif, I didn't even let you speak. So, any final words from you?
Thank you guys for letting me on. It is always dope to rock with two of the three dopest cats in podcasting on the gaming side and all of podcasting. So, thank you all for letting me rock with y'all. And check out us on Spawn On Me Too if you want to hear some dope gaming discussions as well.
100%. Spawn On Me is definitely one of my favorite podcasts. You guys are very cerebral of, not Cicero so much, but you and Sharif are. And, you know, all jokes aside, I love the conversations that you guys have. And, you know that because I tell you that offline all the time. So go definitely check out Spawn On Me. It's a fantastic podcast with some very interesting discussions along the way. So we need to stop talking. This has been episode 588 of Gamertag Radio, and we're out.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.